90% of consumers read online reviews before visiting a business. What do people see when they look you up online? We give you the tools you need to take control of your reputation. Send surveys to your customers via text message with Testimonial Collector. Get 5-star reviews on all the major platforms like Google, Yelp, and more. Track what people are saying about your business with Reputation Manager. Respond to comments and turn negative reviews into happy customers. See what your competitors' customers are saying about them with Competition Tracker. Learn great marketing tactics and what it takes to stay on top. A bigger social presence means more connections. Automatically generate and schedule engaging social media posts with Social 365. Build trust, boost sales, and grow your business. Hello, and welcome back to the Day in the Life of an Entrepreneur. You are watching the Entrepreneur Life Show, or you are listening on one of your very favorite podcast apps. I'd like to once again always say thank you to all of my listeners, subscribers, and followers who have been so faithful in helping me grow this platform. Thanks again. And I want to make sure that I always give a special shout out to my sponsor, Marketing Out the Box Media, Marketing Out the Box with Sean Maddox, who has been a great supporter of the show, always helping us out, helping me in getting my marketing and advertising to really make this show what it is. He has been a great asset. So again, if you want to check out my sponsor, Marketing Out the Box, right there with Sean Maddox. You'll see on the commercial, go to my website, entrepreneurshow.com, click on the Marketing Out the Box link, and it will direct you right to Sean Maddox. And of course, if you want to be a sponsor, contact us, and or maybe even I have a great guest on the show that fits the platform, let me know. If you are chatting and you are watching the live, whether you're on YouTube or on Facebook or on podcast, let me know where you are watching from or listening from. Go ahead and super chat in YouTube. Let me know where you're listening or watching from, and maybe then my guest can answer some questions for you. So let's get today's show started. We normally, obviously, you know, we air on Thursdays, but we do accommodate for a lot of our guests, and we did want to accommodate for this guest as we did have some people that actually wanted to hear her, but wanted us to do it for another day. So here we are on Friday, and that is Melanie Perry. So why this is a really good asset to this segment is if you have been following me, Melanie Perry is a certified financial planner. And if you've been following, if you have been listening to the shows on one of your favorite podcasts, or whether you've gone back to the social site, my website, and you have seen some of the past guests, quite a bit of entrepreneurs and celebrities, what it has always come down to, it seems as though people wish they had have been more educated in the financial areas of whether it be personal or business. I think they kind of intertwine. They would have been more successful and made less mistakes. And they're finding out later in life. So this is an excellent segment. So if you have some questions, you want to connect with her, make sure you listen. You can get back to her. This is Melanie Perry. She is the founder of Zillionaire Enterprise, a financial literacy company. She has done so much for women in business, people in general. She has actually had even a summer camp for the youth, already educating in financial literacy. She is recognized by many organizations, including the Los Angeles chapter, NAACP for Women. So I want to welcome her aboard. This is going to be really, really, really a great segment. So I'm going to bring her on right now. And here we go. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. And I see that my camera is not active. Oh, my.
It's okay. So, if you can get it working, we can still hear you because this is such an important segment. So if it isn't, I want to go on. But, you know, if you have to tweak it, it's okay.
Okay. All right. I don't know how I can tweak and talk at the same time. But this is not usual. So my apologies about that.
Not a problem. So first I'd want to say welcome to the show. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Life Show. And I really appreciate your wanting to do this on a Friday, as I did have some requests. And I have had people ask about this portion of a segment that we really have not dived into.
Yes. You know, financial planning is often that touchy subject. You know, people will feel more free to talk about their sex lives over their financial life. And in order to, you know, truly experience financial freedom, I know there's been a burst of entrepreneurship, particularly women getting into entrepreneurship. And the goal and objective is to have time and money freedom. But if your financial house is not in order, if you don't have the right financial foundation, and your main focus is just to bring in the income, which is very important. I can't help you manage the money if there's no money to manage.
Right.
But that money management piece is so vital and so integral.
So why this career choice? I mean, you know, can you walk our, you know, walk my listeners into, you know, maybe as you were growing up by the youth, maybe it was struggles that you were having in your family, what you were seeing personally that led you to this direction of a career choice in financial literacy and planning. Did you hear that part?
The question got a little funny. It was sounding a little weird there for a second.
Okay. Go ahead. Did you get the question?
You were saying, like, what made me...
What made you choose this career choice, this path?
Career choice?
Was it personal reasons of, you know, not seeing the really financial planning and people closest to you that this led you to this career, this choice? Hold on, guys. I think she's probably having a little bit of technical difficulty, so hold tight. Let's check her sound. Make sure her sound is okay. One second. Don't go away, you guys. And what I'll do is, just in case, I will get her on the line so we can make sure we get this whole interview and how important this segment is. Just a second. So we're going to get Melanie on the phone. Hey, Melanie.
Hi.
I know you're having technical difficulty, but I wanted to make sure that we still went forward with it because it's such an important subject to have.
Yes, I'm still able to move forward. I just don't know what happened.
So. It's okay. It's okay. So what I do is I have you on the phone and we still are on the screen. So we can start with the first question, which was, as this being your choice and career choice, what made you decide on this path? Was it personal that you had maybe struggles or family and you knew that this is something that you wanted to make a career choice?
Well, it was actually being in business has always been something that I have found to be something of interest. And when I started, you know, as a youth, I started, you know, selling candy, you know, in high school and this and that. And then when I got into college,
right,
there was a, you know, designation to be a degree in quantitative economics, and I thought, well, that's the closest thing to economics, so
right,
why not? And it's just been that interest in business and that has kind of led me through. And as I was learning about economics, I fortunately didn't come from a family that didn't educate me about finances. So I was familiar with savings. I was familiar with investing.
Right.
And so when I got into, you know, my degree, what I began to understand even more was just how money flows throughout the economy.
Right.
When I graduated and started working in the financial services industry, what I found very intriguing was, one, I'd be able to use my degree to
extend.
And then, two, I'd be able to empower people that look like me about money to be able to affect sustainable change. That's what was the primary motivator. And, you know, naturally, I'd be able to educate myself even deeper
right.
about money and finance and how wealth is actually built.
So when it comes to, you know, for people who are looking for a financial planner, and maybe they don't even know, maybe they don't know that they need one. When is the best time to start looking? What questions would they then ask themselves to say, I think it's time? Because obviously this can be on a personal level. Oh, great. There she is. Let's get her on the stream. Hey, yay. I'm glad that worked out. I'll hang up the phone. Okay. So thank you. Good. So my, so reintroduction.
Hello.
So what are the, how do you know when you're ready for that? What are some questions that a person like myself, whether it be personal or on a professional level, that they should ask themselves to know, you know, it's really time for me to start looking at that, looking at planning.
You know, that's a very good question, because oftentimes people think, well, you know, when I get a job, or when I'm 40 years old, or mm-hmm. when I have enough money, or when I get a kid, or, you know, kind of deferring the need to have a financial professional to help them with their finances. It actually begins before you really need it. Just like with your health insurance, you want health insurance before you need it.
Right.
If you really need health insurance,
right.
you probably can't get it, right?
Right, right.
So it's the same concept. And oftentimes, like with entrepreneurs, it's like, well, when I earn enough money, then, you know, I'll connect with a, you know, financial planner. But in actuality, when you hire a business coach, a business advisor, that's the moment when you also need to hire a financial planner as well. So whether you're on the path of your career or you're on a business path,
mm-hmm.
you still need to have that financial planner in the beginning, in the onset of your financial journey, because what we do is we help you to put everything in the right context.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first primary things you want to be mindful of is creating a solid financial foundation. Now, a lot of people are like, first thing I want to do is to get rid of debt. I'll get to saving once I get
right.
rid of debt.
Right, right.
The challenge with that is oftentimes people have gotten into debt because they didn't have a savings. So how do you begin to stop that cycle if you're trying to
yeah.
be this millionaire, be this multi-millionaire,
yeah.
if you're constantly saving, dumping debt, using, you know, not having savings and then, you know, using your credit card. So you want to do those two things at the same time. You want to have a debt elimination plan
mm-hmm.
as well as a savings plan, and ultimately apply the seesaw effect. So as you are reducing your debt, you're building up your savings. So in a 12-month, 18-month, 24-month time period, you've got zero debt,
mm-hmm.
but you have almost the same amount that you had in debt as you do, you know, in savings, because you save as you've been reducing debt along the way.
So do you think that
wellness
is important to get you there? Because, you know, I remember reading somewhere, and I have taken a couple of financial classes, and you know, I've gone to hear people. And a lot of time, it's dependent on people's mental stability, because they have either it's they spend for when they're happy or when they're sad. When
yeah.
they're going through a situation and not understanding how to plan, because they're mentally not in a stage or a preparation, is still preparing yourself mentally.
Yeah. You know, my philosophy to on a person's journey, 12 or 12, is holistic. Because it doesn't matter how much money you have if you're not mentally stable. Mm-hmm. If you're physically not, you know, if your physical body is not in good, you know, standing. If you're emotionally, you know, out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have these pieces, if you don't have good relationships with yourself, with your friends, with your family members, then what good is it to have all the money, you know, you could ever imagine, right? So it's definitely integral to, you know, make sure that you are applying self-care. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I do is I have a garden and I have gotten very much involved in my garden before it became kind of trendy prior to COVID.
Right.
You know, I've been having a garden. And one of the interesting things that I have learned in my gardening is getting an even deeper understanding with my creator and understanding that life mm-hmm. continues to want to expand. So one of the things that I have noticed in the people that I work with is that we have a desire to want to monetize our God-given talent. And mm-hmm. there's also kind of a resistance towards the accumulation of massive wealth. Now, that concept is changing because many of us are desiring to become multimillionaires and billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that somewhat shift or dichotomy is that we are sometimes not wanting to pursue mm-hmm. that multimillion-dollar, billion-dollar level because there's this concept that, you know, money is bad, money is evil. Having a lot of money, you know, is not really something that's in alignment with my spiritual beliefs or what have you.
Right.
But when you actually look at creation, when you actually look at nature, when you actually look at how life continues to expand and forces. I don't know if you've seen these videos where a small grain of grass or a seed can grow in the midst of a crack.
Right, yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to live, I'm going to grow. There's going to be this mm-hmm. expansion. And if we understand that and we understand that we all were born wealthy, we were all born with something unique from within. So in order to really provide value to others, to be a service to others, to impart something to help other people to rise up, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
then we have to expand. And mm-hmm. one way to do that is to use this tool, which is all that it is, which is money, just mm-hmm. a tool, to align with the wealth that started from within, to come out and say, okay, now, in order for me to benefit from your services, then an easy way to make that exchange is just, here's $2,000 so I can benefit from your services.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, okay, well, let me go, you know, get some jewelry and what else do you want? You need right. tires.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to match up and barter.
Right.
It's just using this tool called money to be able to say, okay, now I can use your services and that's it. And once we begin to understand that money is just energy, then it makes it easier for us to
yeah.
recognize that it's just an exchange. It doesn't have, you can put emotion on it, but it's not beneficial to put the negative emotion on money when it's the user that's determining how effective that money can be used.
So can you explain to our listeners, because often I hear this, I'm sure you hear the same thing, is people who will, they will just take life insurance as their financial planning. And you hear that a lot and people just continually will say, oh, invest. And they're saying, you know, invest in your future by life insurance. It really isn't. Life insurance is a good thing because we all have life insurance. But there is a big difference between planning and financial planning and investing your wealth in life insurance, correct?
Yeah, that's just one piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
When you are creating a comprehensive financial plan, you're looking at your cash flow. That's
mm-hmm.
the first primary thing, because if you're making $1 million and you're spending $2 million, you're broke. So it doesn't matter how much money you're making.
Right.
If you're spending more than what you're earning,
right.
what you're bringing in, you're broke. So your cash flow is critical. You always want to be mindful of having less money go out than coming in. And secondly, where are you putting it? So you want to make sure you have a solid financial foundation, making sure that your debt plan is in order, because not all debt is bad debt, so that you've got the right debt that's going to allow you to leverage your business in a way where you can scale and expand, right? Then you also want to be able to invest in assets that are going to create increased interest for you, but also create guaranteed streams of income. Because one thing that we want to be mindful of, particularly now, whether you're on a career path or you are in business, is we have to create our own pension plan.
Mm-hmm.
Pension plans, unless you work for the county, some of those benefits are not as nice as they have been in the past, not as beneficial or provide as many benefits. But we have to create our own retirement, our own fund, so that we can continue to receive money when we don't want to work anymore or can't work anymore. So life insurance is one means, it's particularly if you're using it as an asset, but it's not the only means. So there's various types of assets. You know, real estate is definitely one. Investing in publicly traded companies are others. And the benefit to having these various assets is that they have not only the ability to increase your wealth while you're not physically working for it, but there's different tax implications. Warren Buffett pays less in taxes than his executive assistant. Why is that? Percentage-wise.
Right.
Why is that? It's because the majority of his wealth is in assets that generate capital gains. One of the highest tax brackets that the 97 percenters are in is receiving W-2 income. So you're taxed at the highest level when you receive W-2 income. So how can you not be taxed at the highest level? You're investing in assets that create capital gains. Capital gains are taxed anywhere from 0% to 20%. That's how the wealthy end up paying less in taxes percentage-wise.
Mm-hmm.
They pay more dollar-wise because we're dealing with, you know, millions and billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But percentage-wise, they pay less because of how well-diversified their assets are. And that only comes from having a clear plan. When I work with people, oftentimes, they have things in place. They have the houses, they have the property, they have, you know, retirement plans and all of that. But, and, you know, insurance, but is it in alignment with where they are right now today? Oftentimes it's not, because it was something they established 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
And they've gotten married, divorced, had kids, grandkids. Life has changed.
Right.
And so your plan needs to evolve and grow as you grow and evolve.
So it's almost as if a lot of us have it wrong when it comes to multiple streams of income. It's, you know, you hear this a lot. Oh, I have all these multiple streams of income. I'm going to be on the beach. But it's really the type of multiple stream of income that you have.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that, because there was a post I saw in one of these women's groups that I'm in that expressed exactly what you just said, in the sense that, you know, people are like, well, how many streams of income do you have? And they listed like 5 to 10 businesses. That's not multiple streams. Well, that is multiple streams of income, but good Lord, that ought to wear you out.
Yeah.
The concept behind multiple streams of income is to have your money hustling harder for you than you work hustling for your money. That's the ultimate objective. And that's where assets come in. One of the major misnomers that many business owners have is, well, I can generate more return on my dollar through my business than I can on this 5% return you're talking about, Melanie. Well, of course you should, because it's your time and energy that you're exerting to generate that 20%, 50%, you know, on your business.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the assets that once you have generated that revenue, that higher, you know, return on your dollar, now the objective is to put that away, stock it away somewhere, so that it's still earning your money, it's still earning money for you, for your benefit, getting tax benefits, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really make sense for it to be generating more interest than what you can actually generate yourself. That's one of the major misnomers that people have, because it's a comparison of, well, I'm not going to invest in that because I can make more with my business. Well, you should. But once you make all that money, where do you set it aside so that you get, so that if and when you get to a point where you don't want to or you can't generate that income anymore, then what?
And that time will come, because that time will come. Yeah.
Not everybody can work until they're 97 years
right.
old.
Right, like, yeah.
I think George Burns passed away at 97, still smoking cigars. You know, if anybody knows George Burns, I'm dating myself on that.
No, I know George. So, so then let's talk about like diversified portfolio and your assets and stuff like that. So if someone were to come to you like myself, what is like the kind of the walkthrough of how you would tell people to prepare what you're looking at and then how you actually help them?
Well, the first thing that I do, that any financial advisor does, is to get clear on your goals.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help you if I don't know where you're trying to go, right? So to get very clear on your goals, the time frame that you want to reach them, to get a good understanding of what your previous experience has been with other advisors. Because some people, when they come to me, they have an expectation that I'm just doing insurance, or they might have an expectation that I just do stock trading, or because that's the experience that they've had in the past. And like you said earlier, most people are not familiar with the financial planning process, which is comprehensive. So I look at your whole, like a general practitioner, general physician, look at your whole situation, and then we put a guideline, a timeline, a plan together that's going to assess, okay, based upon your goals, here's a debt reduction strategy, here's a savings strategy, here's an investment strategy that we're going to apply based upon your risk tolerance, time horizon, and here is a retirement planning strategy. And most people I work with have a desire to want to leave a legacy, create generational wealth, or they want to set up a private foundation. That's a whole nother advanced level of planning. But we put that plan together. Now, anything outside of my area of expertise, such as tax planning, estate planning, then I bring in a professional to work in that area. But it's a team approach. So you want to have your certified financial planner, which is like your quarterback. You want to have your tax planner, of course, also another quarterback player. If you're in a particular specialty, you would have a specialty, you know, attorney that would make sure that your contracts and other legal matters are in place. If you are into real estate, your mortgage lender, real estate agent would also be on the team. If you're in business, your business coach. So these are the team players. Your banker would also be in the mix in terms of making sure that all of your T's are crossed and I's are dotted. And we all need to be in communication with each other. None of us can ego trip in the midst of helping you get to your goal. Because we all have information that overlaps a bit, but our specialty is in taxes, estate planning, financial planning, right? And so we all just have to be mindful of that.
So how
in most cases, it's worked out very well.
So how important do you think a trust is in having all of that in trust, which some people don't?
Can I put it for me again?
How important do you think it is for the trust planning portion of it? Because I think that some people don't see the importance of that part of it.
Wow. Yeah, that's very integral, especially if you don't want to leave family drama. So if you're trying not to leave a hot mess upon your transition, then a trust is vital. One of the things that my grandfather did is in the trust, he said, if anyone contests this, you get nothing.
Oh, wow.
Now,
oh, my.
He basically was thinking about my cousins. Who may have some other road. Remember this? And, so he nipped all of that in the bud. So when my father, the executor, laid out what was going to happen, we were all like, okay. You know, there was no questions or issues or fights or anything like that over how things were going to happen. So that's one way to, one, ensure, this is how some people say you're able to control your money from the grave, mm-hmm. but this is to ensure that the money that you've accumulated over your lifetime, the hard-earned dollars that you've earned, are being passed down in the way that you want them to be passed down. If you have children that are fantastic, they're doing exactly what mm-hmm. you want them to do, and they're contributing to society, to their family, then you can set that as a criteria in your trust to say, as long as you do these things, you'll receive these funds. Now, if you're strung out mm-hmm. on drugs, you're not contributing to society, you're in jail, you're not in alignment with how I want my vision for right. your life to be, then you don't get anything. And you can therefore transfer that, their portion,
right,
to
right.
a charity, nonprofit, or whoever you want. But you can be that specific in a trust in comparison to a will. A will is subject
right.
to be contestable.
Right.
So just because you can right. write it down doesn't mean that you will avoid family drama with just a will.
So, you know, currently I have a trust, me and my better half. And of course, that was prior to me starting my business 5 or 6 years ago. And then there has been so many changes throughout these years, from in changes in insurance and changes in percentages. And so obviously there's going to be changes as you grow in financial planning. So then how often would you say, okay, how often would you then look at, okay, you need to be updating your trust because we're making all these changes within your planning strategies? How important is that?
Oh, it's very important, because if you, you know, set something up where if you have additional assets that you want to now distribute, if you have a new son or daughter, niece mm-hmm. or nephew that you want to add, you know, to your plan, you got to make sure they're included. Mm-hmm. So anytime you have major changes in your life like that, then you definitely need to update your will or trust. What I do on a quarterly basis, just mm-hmm. to make sure that I've touched all the financial planning pieces mm-hmm. with my clients, is I have a particular theme that I go through with my clients. So the first quarter is about your goals for the year and investments. Mm-hmm. We make sure we touch bases on all that. The next quarter, which is this quarter right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the second quarter is when I look at your retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
Third quarter is about insurance, making sure all your beneficiaries and everything is updated there. And if we need to make any adjustments to your auto and homeowners insurance, just for you, do an insurance analysis. And then the latter oh. quarter is when I address taxes and estate planning. Because I was trying to figure out 20 years ago when I started, how am I going to make sure that all of my clients are on track with
yeah.
things when I'm dealing with so many different people? And I was like, well, I'll just touch bases with them quarterly on specific financial planning topics. And that way I can make sure we at least talk about it. Now, I can do all the talking, but you've got to do the action. So,
wow.
I've been able to make sure that at least we've had a conversation about it, and helping them to follow through and follow up.
So that's impressive then, because since you're actually working with them on the planning, which is actually directing their future, and in a sense, it's sad to say demise, but you're able to say, okay, now we need to look at, because of these accomplishments that you have made, we need to start looking at now everything that you've done and you've put in place if we have to make some changes. So you can direct them to when they know what changes to make and all these other plans and stuff within their will and so forth.
Right. And see, that's the difference between an active financial planner. I should say financial advisor, because financial planner needs to do these kinds of things anyway. But an active advisor versus one that just sold you a product, which isn't a bad thing because you may have needed that product.
Right.
But a active financial advisor is going to be one that keeps in contact with you
mm-hmm.
More than just, hey, here's something else for me to sell to you.
Right.
But really to engage and make sure that you have all of your financial house in order.
And that's something that I recall we didn't know. We had, when we first got our trust, and it was our banker.
Mm-hmm.
When we changed our bank account and we started, of course, increasing money in our savings, changed our 401k, if it actually had not been for the banker to tell us, we'll deal with your trust because we know you have a trust. I was like, we have to let them know. I was like, well, yeah. So then it made me aware, because you don't think of all of the changes you're making throughout the year, how important that was. So, you know, can you explain the difference of fiduciary and non-fiduciary for the? I have to read up on that.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of changes, you know, in the industry. And so a person that has a certified financial planning designation, mm-hmm. or a Series 65 or 63 has a fiduciary responsibility to have the client's best interest in mind. Mm-hmm. Now, whether I have these degrees or not, I always have my client's best interest in mind. This is just now a regulatory requirement, mm-hmm. for anyone that has that license. And it might sound funny, like, how can you be in the industry and not have have the client's best interest in mind? Well, this gets into legal definitions and, you know, whether or not, like I was saying before, there's the issue of suitability, mm-hmm. and then there's the issue of understanding the holistic nature of what the client's goals are. So a financial advisor can look at your situation and say, oh, well, this product would benefit you. And mm-hmm. it can be suitable.
Mm-hmm.
But do they have the fiduciary responsibility to look at your whole entire situation and be mindful of mm-hmm. all the various aspects of your financial situation? That's two different things.
Mm.
Interestingly enough, it's two different things in the eyes of the law.
Mm.
Not everybody knows that. That's how, when I come across people and they have this account, that account, and I'm like, okay, how does this all fit together? Do you even know your number? Most people don't even know the number of what they need to have this time and money freedom.
Oh,
so it's those nuances that you sometimes people even falsely feel that they're maxing out their retirement plans. They're saving here. They're investing here, investing there. They got property over here, property over there. But are you overpaying in taxes? Are you giving the government a tip?
Wow.
Are you really in line with what it's going to take for you to live the desired lifestyle that you want to have? Do you actually know that what you're doing is in alignment with that?
Right. You don't think of that. You just think of what you have, not what it's doing for you.
Yeah. The feeling that you're on track and the knowledge, the numerical knowledge that you're on track are two different things.
Right. Yeah. So how do you even find the right or know what questions to ask a financial planner? Because, you know, and I'm not being disrespectful to anybody in any industry. So, you know, when it comes to like there's coaching and business planning and coaching, it's almost like everybody's one nowadays. You don't really know who's really certified, who's real, and what their background education is. And it comes the same with when it comes to financial planning. As I said, people are like, you know, I see people on social media and they will say, oh, well, inbox me and, you know, I'll tell you what to do. You know, I see a lot of that inbox stuff. Or, you know, they just took a class and they say, oh, I need someone to help me with planning and budgeting. And people just think a budget is different from planning. So, you know, how do you know what questions to ask to make sure that you have the right person? And can you even check references? Can you go someplace, look and say, are they actually, you know, registered, certified? Are they who they are? Because I see a lot of it being in the accounting industry. I stay in my lane. I know what my lane is. And I tell people this a lot. You know, I do bookkeeping. You know, I take courses. I stay certified. But there's certain things I know that I'm not, I don't keep myself educated every day. And so, mm-hmm. and there's things that you need to educate yourself on with laws and tax laws. And if I don't, I won't do them due diligence. I can advise, but I say that, but I'll stay in my lane and let me give you to somebody who's more educated in that area. How do you look for that? How do you know?
Well, you brought up so many wonderful points. being a financial coach, versus a certified financial planner are two different things. Mm-hmm. And a financial coach can only help you but so far. Mm-hmm. And it gets confusing to the public because there's organizations that will certify a financial coach. And so they're a certified financial coach. And then I come with certified financial planner. How is a client going to know the difference? It's all money, you know, and it's right. certified. You guys right. must know what you're talking about. So it's a lot of unfortunate confusion out there. But I would say the added value that coaches, financial coaches have provided is an awakened awareness mm-hmm. that you need to do something with your money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they blend they mainly focus on the emotional piece, which is integral. As I shared earlier, financial wellness is holistic. Mm-hmm. And so if your mind and emotions are not in balance, it makes it a challenge. So to answer your question directly, you don't know what you don't know, so to speak, right?
Right.
But there are questions you can begin to ask. So one is just getting to know the person, asking them, are they connected to a broker dealer?
Mm-hmm.
Asking them if you know to ask if they're connected to a broker dealer or not. Being able to ask, how do they go about working with their clients? Do you, you know, educate them? Do you teach them about, you know, the investment market? You know, what kind of licenses do they have?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to check for verification, you can always go to finra.org, finra.org. And you can put in their securities license.
Oh, number. Wow.
And you can see what licenses they have. You can see if they have any bankruptcies. You can check their whole background.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's something a lot of people don't know, but you can definitely do your due diligence and do that. The same thing for certified financial planners. We all have numbers. We all have codes that you can put into the financial planning database to see mm-hmm. who is it I'm dealing with. Did they really tell me who they are? You know, are they actually valid? So you can see all of that. Same with insurance agents. We all have, you know, agent codes, agent licensing numbers.
Right.
We can verify all of that. So I think at the end of the day, it's about how much experience and knowledge does the person have. What's the kind of connectability a rapport you can establish with the advisor? Because you want to work with someone that you like, right? Someone that you feel that they are going to provide you with transparent information,
right?
Be able to explain the pros and cons. You can ask them questions like, you know, well, how often do you communicate with your clients? Do I have to constantly reach out to you, or do you mm-hmm. reach out to me when you know that there's something that you think would be beneficial, you know, for me? So there's actually a list of questions. They're not all on the top of my head,
as you can see
right now. So there's a list of questions that I do provide to my clients when they're seeking out, like, tax professionals,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's good to just kind of sit back and assess, what are my expectations for the financial professionals that I'm working with? What has been my previous experience that I don't want to experience again?
Right.
And that can be a question, you know, for you to ask as well. Because again, at the end of the day, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you begin to ask questions, other thoughts can come to mind to provide some clarity. Now, I see that you have one of my landing pages up.
Yeah.
So just as a point of clarity, let me share that I do have Zillionaire Enterprises, which is my financial literacy company. That's where I help women entrepreneurs and the little ones. I just did a workshop this past weekend for the Purpose Youth Foundation. And so I do mostly education there. I do financial coaching, actually, through Zillionaire Enterprises. And that's for people who are beginning to get the fundamentals in place. I do wealth management through my private wealth management practice, where the more extensive, advanced level planning comes into play, where my CFP is actually being utilized in that sense.
So do you think that cryptocurrency is included in that? Because it's such the fad right now. in your investment, retirement investing, like, you know, and then explain risk tolerance, you know, and that's in any type of course when you're investing and stuff like that. But it seems to be the thing. I'm on Bitcoin, crypto, you know.
Yeah. So I got to be careful in answering this question, because anytime I talk about a security, I have to get that clearance through my broker dealer.
Right.
And I didn't get that clearance to have that conversation today. But what I will say is that whenever you're dealing with speculative investments, you want to make sure that you have your foundation in place first. Now, with certain investments, you can invest in them in a way that is not as aggressive. Mm-hmm. But you still have to be mindful that everything else is taken care of first. That's the integral piece. And when it comes to fads and trends, I don't think that cryptocurrency is going away. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely here to stay. And how it's beginning to get incorporated in so many different areas of our financial experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more so a matter of learn it and get with the program. and whether that's to use it as a commodity, as a currency, or whether it's as a means to invest, you have to be mindful of your risk tolerance, your time horizon, how you determine your risk tolerance.
Yeah.
If I was to invest $10,000, and it dropped down to $10,000, so $5,000 in an hour, in a day, in a month, would your stomach, you know, flurry? You get butterflies in your stomach about that?
Right.
Comfortably. That's how you determine your, that's a simple way to determine your risk tolerance, is how much can I feel comfortable in losing? That's why I say when you're dealing with more aggressive types of investments that have a lot of volatility,
mm-hmm.
then is your financial foundation in place? Are you contributing into the right areas where you know, hey, this money I'm dealing with over here is just, hey, whatever happens to happens to, because
right.
I know that I've got everything over here
mm-hmm.
is in order.
So can you share a little bit about how you started the whole summer thing with the youth? I mean, no one thinks about the youth really in financial literacy. It's always like starting a business. I've seen a lot about, you know, having your kids start a business on something. But if you don't even know anything about how a business works and you just run, and people do this, as you know, they just start a business and think, I'm making money and that's all I need to do.
Yeah, and that's an important piece, because again, if you don't have the money, I can't help you manage it, but it's not the only piece. And so I think it's because of what I do, that was a gap.
Yeah.
It's about how to make the money, how to invest, but nothing about real, there are no major programs about financial planning for
mm-hmm.
kids. Budgeting, yes,
mm-hmm.
a little bit about debt, credit, yeah, but financial planning, nobody's talking about that. So because of what I do, that's how I came up with it, because I saw this big gap. And it really started at Marcus Garvey School. I forget now how I met the principal, but I did. And so she's like, you know, I want you to teach these little ones, you know, about money. So I'm like, sure, no problem. I put a proposal together for 7th and 8th graders. And
mm-hmm.
so she's like, okay, fine, we'll do that. But I want you to teach the babies. And I'm like, like kindergartners? She's like, yeah. So kindergarten all the way up to the sixth grade. And I said, okay. She's like, I'm going to handle it. So I began to watch Sesame Street with purpose and not just for fun anymore.
Uh-huh.
And I began to think about how kids learn. And my mother was an educator for LAUSD for a while, so I had some kind of educational background or teaching background, but I never formally taught. So as I began to learn how kids learn, it was through the art of storytelling, oral tradition, right? And so I began to teach them using stories, songs. I had props. You know, I asked a lot of questions, got them engaged. And, you know, it's interesting, when I started at Marcus Garvey School, one of the first to introduce the classes to them, one of the first things that I said or asked them, I was like, what are three things you can do with money? And they all said, spend it, right?
Right.
In unison. And I said, okay, yeah, you can spend it. What else? And they said various forms of spending money. And so I said, you can invest. And they're like, investigate? I said, no. Invest. They're like, investigator? And so I wrote the word on the board, invest. Like, no more, just invest, right? And they're like, oh, okay. And so we went through, you know, the whole 8 weeks, once a day for an hour, for 30 minutes, each class. So I went from class to class. We did this over the course of 8 weeks. There was a 2-week break for Christmas. At the end of 8 weeks, I said, okay, what are three things you can do with money? They said, invest was the first. You can save it and then spend it. So they got the order. You know, in place. And that was just 30 minutes once a week over an 8-week time frame. Their paradigm shifted. And so from there, I wrote a children's book, you know, about it. I began teaching a summer class at Westerly College through the College Bound program. And then, you know, some people would ask me to either volunteer, because I do this for pay or for free.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would ask me to volunteer at their church and teach their kids or, you know, things like that. So it's just been a joy. I think I know I learned as much as they learned in that process. Our children know more than you think they're listening,
right?
More than you think they're listening to, and they're picking up. So have healthy conversations with them about money because they're listening.
So do you ever then do speaking engagements at like schools, high schools and colleges, just only because you have that, you're involved in the summer program where you offer that service?
Well, I've done career days. Mm-hmm. I do, anytime someone asks me to do a career day, I'm definitely, you know, excited to do that. I haven't actually, like, you know, had a speaking gig, if you will, for that, but I'm receptive and open.
Yeah, that would sound like it would be a really good option because of, you know, right now, of course, and I say, you know, I'm in my 50s, but I'd say within the last 15, 20 years, it seems more that people aren't looking at, and we see a lot of this in entertainment because I've had quite a few celebrities on the show. Some happen to be my client and they tell me that same story. You know, I wish I had a really paid attention to my money. I wish I had a, been more involved and invested in other things for now they're later in life. Now mm-hmm. looking at investing and getting it together after they've lost it, and or because they lost it with just bad planning, or lost it because, I guess, the same thing, spending or having other people control it. And so you see, and for youth, everything is quick. It's either how I can make it quick and fast. So it would seem so much, it would seem so important and necessary to teach this in the school, because they really don't. And when I went in school, they didn't. And my kids are now in their early 30s and have grandchildren, and you just have math, you know, you have biology, you have cooking, you know, class, and not that home and stuff isn't great. I don't even know if they even have it all anymore.
Yeah.
But they've taken so much out of the education of the school system. They don't even have in cursive anymore. You don't even have to look at a map. You can Google. So it's almost like our children aren't being they're not being prepared.
Yeah. Life skills have been taken out because, you know, the, disaster, was it the storm? Forgive me if I'm not getting this right, in Houston that took place and things shut down. So we're so dependent upon using our cell phone for lights, direction, communication, everything else. How about this thing called a Thomas guide? Do we know how to read a map? Do we have light or batteries for, you know, flashlights and all that? So it's about preparedness. It's about life skills. And so we do have to be mindful of teaching our children about basic fundamental life skills, including finances. And the unfortunate reality is that it's not, here's the thing, financial literacy is actually mandated in about 20 or 30 states. But the challenge is, have the schools properly incorporated a program for it to be easy for the teachers to incorporate? Because the teachers are already bombarded with all of the mandates and the new this and new that every cycle. Every 3 to 5 years, there's something new that teachers have to now change in terms of how they teach the kids, the new math and all this kind of stuff, right? But that's the bureaucratic, you know, challenge is there's requirements, but it's not always easy for the teacher to incorporate it into their routine, their curriculum. Right. So, I mean, that's a whole another challenge, which is again why I do what I do in terms of doing career days, and I do a little teaching when I talk about my career, of course. But I have done after school programs, and it's really a matter of taking, like, the people, so to speak, taking charge,
right?
And the parents demanding and requesting these perhaps after school programs to be a part of the curriculum, because to try to incorporate it into the public school system is a nightmare, because I've been down that road. It's just a challenge. But there are public private schools. Melody Hobson, who's the vice president of Ariel Funds. Ariel Funds has a foundation where they have created a school.
Oh.
And their school was focused on finance. And they're not the only ones. They're just the ones I can remember right now.
Right.
So it's happening. It's not happening in large numbers, but the awareness is there. The struggle is known.
Mm-hmm.
And people are doing things about it. I like myself, you know, I have various programs and things. I actually have a curriculum, because I'm thinking of, well, how can the teacher begin to incorporate finance into history,
right,
into science, into all of these different disciplines, because money relates to all of that. How do scientists get funding for their research? That's money. Right?
I mean, there's so many. If adults aren't don't know it, then how is the youth gonna know it if we're not teaching?
That's another factor too. Teachers are somewhat intimidated in teaching it, because it's like, I don't have my stuff anymore, you know? So it's a lot of layers. And I think at the end of the day, teachers, administrators are doing the best that they can with what they have. And now, in the midst of, you know, this pandemic, it's really not going to kick off, you know? So it's definitely incumbent upon parents to send their kids to my summer camp and to, you know, outside venues that offer, you know, this information.
And you would think that in this, especially in this time, it's showing that how the economy is, and it hasn't even hit us yet, really, with all of this, you know, the stimulus money and all these, you know, PPP loan. I tell people now, I said, you know, we're just in the early stages. And if you're not utilizing what little you have properly, it's going to get worse. If you're not educating now. So people are thinking, I hear a lot of people thinking we're out of it. And really, we haven't even gotten into it yet.
No, it's a false sense of security going on right now. Yeah, there's another shift, major shift.
Yeah.
That's coming. And the good thing about it is, because of the pandemic, people have become more financially conscious, more aware.
Right.
People have adjusted their spending habits. They began to save. They're paying more attention, because I've definitely seen an upswing in finances and the focus on it, and a surge, of entrepreneurship. But there's definitely a lot more need for education and understanding the most effective way to make. For
Well, I really appreciate, I know we went a little bit over, though I really appreciate your taking the time to be on the show and kind of changing it a bit. And it was one of the, on the podcast, I have people who message asking for certain segments. So we were needing a financial planner. So it tells me that, surprisingly, when I started this podcast, I did it and I didn't expect to get, you know, a lot of listeners. I thought people don't care, want to hear about accounting or money, because you think so. Whenever I would go to a networking event, and all these people would say they did something amazing, and I'd have to do my 3-minute thing, I would always start off with, "Oh, I'm a contract killer," you know, and people would just think I'm like, "Well, no, really, I do accounting," because it seems so boring. But then what I found is that people were listening, but didn't want to make it known that they were having financial problems. So, and I thought, wow, because my engagement was going up with all these listeners. I'm like, people are really listening? What I thought people didn't want to hear, but people don't want to say that, you know what, I'm making some bad decisions or I've made bad decisions. They want the answers and they want to, you know, to share it in private, but they don't want it out there. And do you find that being the same thing as why? So my show has grown so much. I'm like, oh my gosh, people are really downloading these episodes. So, which tells you people really want to hear, they want the help.
Yeah. And they want the real deal. They want the real information. And it's interesting. You say the accounting is boring. Everyone wants to make money in cryptocurrency and stock market, you know, all these different, you know, stock apps and all that kind of stuff have surged. But nobody wants to put the Spanx on, do the push-ups,
right.
and ensure that investment account stays where it is, because it's on a solid financial foundation. But that's the unfortunate truth and reality is you got to get the boring savings in place. You got to make sure that you're bookkeeping and accounting, that you're uploading your receipts. You have to have those kinds of financial habits in place to get to the fun part, the second part, because what you and I do is boring, and it requires work.
Work, yeah.
And you have to be consistent with it, just like with your diet. You know, if you're trying to lose weight, you're trying to decrease the fat or whatever it is. Well, you can't do that if you're eating Chick-fil-A every day.
It's not gonna happen.
You gotta have a discipline. Right. There's discipline in freedom, or freedom in discipline.
And my mentor, he happens to be the head of Nevada's ACA here, has told me in the very beginning is people need us but hate us.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to hear when they have to put the work in, they just want you to make magic. So I'm sure you hear that, you know, that they, you know, well, when am I going to just start making money? You know, it's like, when is it going to work for me? As if it's a turnaround and they have no work to do.
Yeah. It's just the truth of the matter. One thing that I've been able to, you know, kind of make fun in how I work with people is I lead by the carrot. Mm-hmm. So I make sure that I keep their goals in mind, and I say, hey, in order for us to get to this point, we got to do quote the dirty work, the unfun work. So let's pull out that budget, your spending plan, and let's get to it. Let's see where are we with things. And sometimes I'm jovial. I make light just to make the situation not as daunting.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, too, they are putting a lot of judgments on themselves about what they should have done, could have done. They're 40 years old, 50 years old, shoulda, coulda, woulda, all of this stuff. And I also let them know, I'm not here to judge, I'm here to assess. And the assessment is just to make sure that what you say you want, we're in pursuit of that. Mm-hmm. So once they know that I'm not judging, and I don't have to hear a long-winded story about why you spent X amount on your groceries this week, you know, I'm doing their budget, sometimes it's like, I just need the number. I don't need the story. and you know, once they begin to really understand, I'm like, it's okay. You got to this point and you're now working with me or you're working with a professional so that you can get to where you're trying to go, because how you got to where you are now is only going to get to where you are now.
Right.
You're going to need some assistance to help get you further. And so you got to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I help people to feel as comfortable as possible in that vulnerable state, and help them realize that they weren't wrong. You know, they weren't, you know, bad, you know, having bad credit and all that.
Right.
Kind of stuff.
Right.
Stuff happens. Mm-hmm. Stuff happens. And, you know, the more you understand finances, the more you realize things like bankruptcy were specifically designed to get people out of a situation. When you understand how money, like what money is a medium of exchange, and you stop attaching all this emotion, you know, to it, it begins to help you put your finances in proper perspective.
Right.
You know, wealthy people use bankruptcy as a tool all the time.
Right.
And they are not crying and not sleeping about it.
Yeah. You're so right. Well, thank you again for being a part of the show. I'm of course, and I hope that you listeners and the few that I've had some messages, that this episode was really helpful for you. I want you to know that you can go back to the webpage, entrepreneurlifeshow.com. You can see Melanie, if you're actually, I'm sorry if I'm looking to my left, I'm looking at the podcast. That if you want to see who Melanie is and connect with her. And of course, before we go, she's going to tell you, of course, how to get a hold of her. But you can make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, watch the interview, and or go to the webpage, entrepreneurlifeshow.com, if you are listening on your podcast platform. If you don't mind, Melanie.
Well, Rose, I want to thank you for dealing with me and my technical issues and inviting me on to the show. This has been a delightful conversation. You are a beautiful spirit, and I'm glad that we connected and that you were mindful to share this information with your audience.
Yeah.
So for those of you who want to connect further, you can definitely visit me on my social media outlets at Zillionaire, and that's Z-E-A-L-L-I-O-N-A-I-R-E. That's on Facebook, Instagram, and I think I still, my Twitter account is still active. I don't know. And then for those of you who are ready for more advanced planning and looking for wealth management, connect with me over on my LinkedIn page, and that would just be Melanie D, or Melanie Denise Perry, one of the two. Melanie Perry, and then you'll see CFP, and that's where I am on LinkedIn.
Well, thank you, everyone, for another great show. And I hope you guys tune in for the next one. Check the calendar at entrepreneurlifeshow.com. And until then, we are out until next time. Bye, everybody.